Good morning, my friends, and welcome to the Space Game Junkie Podcast. I, as always, am your co-host, Brian, and joining me, as always, is your co-host, Jim.
Welcome to Space Game Junkie. I love you.
we all love you, actually. Because we're doing a morning podcast, we are sadly again without Hunter. He can't do the morning ones. So it's just Jim and I. And we have a guest this morning joining us from jolly old England to talk about his game Shallow Space Insurgency. Please welcome James Hunter. Right? No, Martin. James Martin.
James Martin. Oh, yeah, James. So.
Sorry.
So it's funny.
James Martin.
It's funny.
Good morning, James.
Or afternoon. Hi, everyone. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for coming. So we're here to talk about your beautiful RTS. Now, has it always been Shallow Space Insurgency, or was it shallow, just Shallow Space for a while? And I'm getting my titles confused in my head.
It's been beautiful.
Yeah, that's it was just Shallow Space originally, but I think the idea is that we're going to evolve the engine into multiple iterations. So.
Oh, okay.
Shallow Space Insurgency is the first one.
Right. And you're currently on Indiegogo. Did you extend that campaign, by the way? Did you extend the campaign?
No, we didn't really see the point because, I mean, if it had reached 60, 70%, we probably would have extended it then. But as it sort of sat at around 10%, we've opened up pre-orders on the website and we're going to go down that route.
That was going to be my next question. What's plan B? The sad thing about Indiegogo, it's a fine platform. It just doesn't have the visibility of a Kickstarter, I think.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I did do a bit of research and I saw that Indiegogo gets around 14 million, I think it is, visits per month, and Kickstarter gets around 15. However, the thing that I failed to realize was, you know, Kickstarter is 95% games and Indiegogo is like 75% of everything else. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So if you have a look at the games section, there's not an awful lot of serious games on there. Yeah. So we took the punt. We thought, well, we'll go on there and we'll likely stand out, you know, in the crowd. But yeah, we sort of underestimated how much traffic we'd need, really.
That's fair. Well, you know,
your plan B is a lot better than my plan B. My plan B involves a tin cup in the Walmart parking lot. So just going car to car. Please fund my game. So,
well, you know what you could do? You can get a Santa outfit.
Oh, in
July, and a bell, and you just get one of those red buckets, and say you're from the Salvation Navy. And you just okay. Sorry.
I'm Gamergate Santa. Please donate to the children. Okay.
The children need ethics.
That's right. It's about ethics and orphanages. Bastards. Think of the children.
Think of the children. So yeah, we're here to talk about now. Let's for people who don't know, who are listening or watching for the first time, why don't you hit people up with the elevator pitch, James? I'm going to try and differentiate you two by saying James and Jim. Hit people up with like the elevator pitch of what Shallow Space is. Insurgency. Shallow Space Insurgency. Oh, that's hard to say. Shallow Space Insurgency.
So to alleviate confusion, for the rest of the show, you can just refer to me as El Conquistador.
Conquistador, LC. Yeah. Okay, LC. You got it, man. That's your DJ name, LC.
So,
DJ LC in the house.
Or you can call me John Serna. I sent you that prank call, didn't I?
I'm good. Not sure.
Oh, my God.
Sorry, later. James. Please, we are a little loopy this morning.
It's
please.
Too early. I've had three cups of coffee and I'm still going.
It's pretty early. The five-hour energy, I don't think, still has kicked in. So, please, sorry. Go ahead.
Please do go on.
Shallow Space. Hit it.
Yeah, so Shallow Space is a three-dimensional RTS. So you can move the ships in all three dimensions, up and down, as well as left and right, forwards and backwards. And the focus is on the groupings of the ships. So they're grouped into wings and flotillas. And the player will be able to sort of drag and drop the ships in between those various formations as they produce them at their shipyards, like a standard RTS. And yeah, we're going to sort of stretch the envelope a little bit by leaning more towards the Nexus Jupiter incident side of things. So,
ooh, you know, okay.
Yeah, there's going to be an overriding story arc. There'll be a big area to explore. It won't be played from one linear map to the next. And that's it in a nutshell, really. It will sort of borrow from both camps, both the Nexus camp and the Homeworld camp. There'll be missions where you configure your fleet before you go in, and there'll be missions where you start with just your sort of mothership, and then you go in and you build resources, and you collect together your fighting force.
Oh, I see. So right now in this demo, it looks like we have two flotillas, A and B. Looks like one has fighters, I think. That's what these little arrows are. I'm guessing these are fighters, I think.
That's right, yeah.
Okay, and the one is just more capital ship type thingies. So let's see, we have right now this demo is just basically just, you know, incoming waves. So we're just going to send Flotilla A over here. Hey, you go over there, buddy. Go over there. Yeah, go. And now, so it looks like we have now the graphics are just stunning. I mean, just absolutely stunning. I love the ship design. The detail.
I like the hyperspace effect when they jump in. That I find it most stimulating.
I've not seen that yet. I'm gonna have to find.
No, I've been telling James about it. I've been gushing on Twitter to him for like 6 months. Like, dude, that's the best thing ever. So
yeah, that's gonna actually feature in the, well, not the next version, but the version after. And the ships, you're gonna be able to sort of jump them around in and out of combat.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, with a special ability. So keep your eyes on the IndieDB page because it's all happening.
Now, we got two flotillas here, and I'm sending one to go after this enemy flotilla here. But what is this green flotilla over here? Are they allies? Is that what that means?
Yeah, so those are the station's sort of patrolling forces, so they'll give you a hand. Yeah.
Cool.
Whether you go in first or whether you choose to sort of cower behind them is up to you.
Well, here we go. Here we go. Oh, it's so pretty. Oh, it's so pretty. Now, right now, this demo doesn't feature any kind of construction or officers, but that's coming.
Yeah, that's apparently. Right.
Now, what kind? Now, how does construction work? Is it like typical RTSs, where you have a certain amount of? We have, because I see resources up here. It looks like you have money and crystals, and I'm guessing that's metal.
That's right. Yep.
And then crew. And those are all limitations as to how many ships you can build, I am guessing.
That's right, yeah. So the crew is the sort of main limiting factor, because the idea isn't to build, you know, this huge fleet and then to just drag a selection box around them and send them in. The idea is to get the player to think about the sort of ships that they're building and the tasks that they're going to fulfill. And to that end, you're able to actually configure the loadout on the ships themselves. So the individual turrets you'll be able to replace. Hulls will be equipped with modules. So, I don't know, shield extenders, hull repairers. You see that sort of thing.
Okay, you don't have to do that in real time while the fight's going on, though, right? So
no, not at all. You can pause it.
That's actually what I was going to ask is mid-fight, can you just pause it, give orders, figure out what you're doing?
That's right.
Okay,
yeah.
So yeah, that's pretty much essential to me, especially as I get older.
Pausing in a real-time strategy game is like essential to me anymore as well, because you know, you get older, the reflexes start to slow down a little bit.
Absolutely. But you know, as well as pausing the game, you can actually slow down time.
Right. It's comma. So. You can slow it down to essentially pausing it, but you can also speed it up. You can also speed it up to 500.
Yeah, so you can slow it down to half time or quarter time.
And apparently you can speed it up to 525% of normal.
That's a good clip. So the are you declaring a formation for your guys to be in, or do you kind of put them and then they stay where you've put them at and – and what tactical relevance does it have? Because I'm seeing that they kind of form into a line and go at each other, and then they're chucking missiles at range. I kind of wonder, like, in naval combat, you know, you have your most valuable ship in the center, and then you put a picket of ships around it, right, to detect, you know, submarines and small craft and whatever. Because naval warfare is a lot more about detection and that. But in space, it's like, does it make sense to have a formation like that, or do you just want to put as much firepower on a single target as possible?
Well, it's an interesting question. Because the space, the combat in shallow space is very fluid, it doesn't really make any sense to put a lot of effort into the formations. And I mean, when I say formations, I mean the shape of the formation, because it doesn't really matter. And in effect, the formations that they come in the demo is probably the best ones, because they're not blocking each other's line of fire.
Yeah, as long as they don't knock into each other, and it's more about composition instead of formation, right?
Exactly, yeah. And that composition is an important feature, because, you know, as your units, if you can picture the play area might be 10, 20 times the size that it is in the demo, and you'll have these flotillas spread around doing various tasks. As you're producing ships, rather than having to fly all the way back, fly the camera all the way back to the shipyard and sort of work it all out, you can literally just drag these icons from the detached box into the flotilla, and then the ship will make their own way there. And that's the idea behind it, really. A little bit more autonomy for the user.
Okay, so when I'm designing my own fleet, how do you balance the weaponry? Because if I have, it seems like missiles are the longest range thing. So are they very low damage because they're the longest range? Otherwise, I'd just build nothing but missile boats and stand at range all day.
Well, absolutely. There's a couple of mechanisms. First of all, there's the military points system, whereby every ship and its configuration is scored. And obviously, the more that you cram into this ship, the higher the score. So it might be that you prefer to play with fewer ships that are just equipped up to the eyeballs with the latest tech, or it could be that you prefer to spread your cost over a much larger fleet of cheaper ships. So I forgot what my original point was, actually. Yeah. What was the question?
But see, you sound like a guy that plays Tyranids. So because you're in UK, right? So it's kind of like Games Workshop's its own religion over there. So
Oh yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So but just, you know, as I'm listening to kind of the point build thing, I immediately thought about, well, yeah, it's kind of how I'd build a Warhammer army, right? Is, you know, it's the mixture of what you do. So, yeah. Can't say War Gear cards, though. That's copyrighted. So, but yeah, I mean, it's the thing of, I look at systems like that are point based, build your own thing, and unfortunately, I don't have anybody around to play with now. Boo-hoo. But I was really into BattleTech as a kid and teenager, and you know that was my every weekend, was to go and play BattleTech with the guys. But a lot of that is, of course, about, well, there's a rules framework, and then you just build your own units from that. And then Steve Jackson's Car Wars was another addiction of mine, which is very much the same. So it's the challenge is to the player to out efficiently build the opponent, and then also be able to utilize it on the table. So yeah, and a lot of my designs did not quite turn out as effective as they looked on paper. I'll say that. Yeah. So is it kind of the same deal here, where you've got a lot of latitude in how you design your ships, and it's just kind of like throw it out there and see if it works kind of thing? And
well, it's I guess what you would have is there are different weapons that do different things. For example, energy weapons do have a higher rate of damage against shield. Kinetic weapons have a higher rate of damage against hull. Then you've got these precise weapons that can actually shoot out the modules that the players can configure. So, the idea is that you'd construct your flotilla. Perhaps you favour taking away the enemy's missiles and then taking away their turrets, or perhaps you just favour straightforward damage. It's up to you, really, to find the strengths and the weaknesses. and to have a collection of flotillas that play to each other's strengths.
Oh, okay. So you could build like one ship that's like a defense frigate that shoots down incoming missiles and kind of put it in front. Okay. Do you simulate any kind of electronic warfare in here where I would have... Go ahead.
Oh, sorry, I was going to say that we have got plans for EW, actually. Nice. And scan ranges, that sort of thing. It's all going to be very, very important. I'm toying with the idea of putting in a cloaked ship into the demo because we've got like this tactical prototype battle cruiser, the Tech 3 hull, and yeah, it can sort of cloak. I've not shown any imagery of that yet, but it is rather cool.
Well, you wouldn't be able to if it's cloaked. Yeah. Just basically show like empty space and be like, hey, here's the new stealth cruiser.
Yeah. Well, that's a really good idea, actually. Yeah. I might do that.
Now, are you going to be able to capture ships at all?
Yeah, it's a tricky one because the idea is that the balance, we've got to keep the balance right, and that's the whole idea with the MP point system. And if you can start just, you know, capturing enemy vessels, it really knocks that to one side. But I don't know, maybe we can roll something in there with the crew mechanic. Maybe if they've got enough crew to capture an enemy vessel, they can do something like that.
Well, do you have a research element, or is everything just unlocked from the get-go and it's just financial whether you can afford it or not?
Well, that's another interesting thing because the player, they play part of a navy, so they're not an omnipotent force that travels from planet to planet taking it over. They're a small cog in a big wheel, as we like to say. I forgot my train of thought then. Sorry, something just popped up on my screen. What was the question? I totally forgot then.
You're saying you were part of a navy, and because of that, you don't have like... unlimited
research. That's
research and resources. Yeah.
So rather than having research, we're thinking about having sort of stations in space which download blueprints from TCN HQ headquarters, for example. Just something a little bit edgy, because the whole research thing doesn't really fit with the framework, I don't think.
Right. Well, it's always kind of bothered me that in an RTS game, like as much as I had loved like Company Heroes and games like that, but to have a game that has that much detail and then you have a little garage and the garage poops out a tank every 10 seconds, it's like wait, no, it just totally blows my immersion. But if you can requisition resources, kind of like the war game air land battle does, where you're not inventing this stuff, it's just you get income and then you can bring it from off the edge of the map. I really like that system. So, you know, much, much more so than having a factory that can actually knock out ships, you know, like as you wait, you know, it's like, oh, we're 3D printing these. So
it's an interesting one, and it's kind of where, you've got to balance realism with fun, you know, and I understand what you're saying about immersion, but you know, the whole mechanic of being able to produce ships in the battlefield, it sort of creates this, you know, feeling that the game is constantly moving. If you're just bringing in a fleet that is just going to stay the same, and the only thing that can happen is you lose ships, you know, it becomes very, very difficult then to make that fun.
Yeah, but since you have hyperspace, you can actually teleport the reinforcements right into the middle of the map if you wanted, and have a perfectly legitimate explanation for that. So
I hear what you're saying. I mean, we've got some interesting mechanics that revolve around that hyperspace travel. For example, because the idea is that we actually want to map out the whole solar system that the player will be sort of flying around in.
Ooh.
And we've got some interesting ideas around that. Like everything will come with its own gravity well. So stations, planets, obviously. And you're unable to jump while you're in that gravity well, which gives the ships an excuse to be traveling around, shooting each other at sublight speeds.
Oh, that's so. Are you going to play that out in the same view that we're looking at here, or is this going to be like the combat view, and then you're actually going to have a map screen until two fleets engage each other? Because that would be kind of like Harpoon in space to me, which would be a welcome thing. So
We knocked together some prototypes a couple of months ago, and there's no reason to we basically proved that you can have this tactical view and then sort of scroll the mouse wheel right back and then just be pulled back into this you know, seamless solar system view. The ships get replaced by just abstract icons. And yeah, we think we can sort of blend the whole lot together and have multiple instances of combat happening in this big simulation. And that solar system map obviously doubles up as a sort of, tactical map, so you can see where the enemy's reinforcements are coming from. And we're going to have all sorts of things going on there, like investigate anomalies, you know, the civilians are being attacked, that sort of thing.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah.
Oh, very cool.
See, I've always thought, because you were talking about the stealth ship before, and mm-hmm. kind of the terrestrial equivalent of a stealth ship in space would be like a mm-hmm. submarine. Right, because let's say it can go stealth, it can only stay quote submerged for so long, right? And then there's maybe ways to ping for it and you know be able to detect it anyway, right? So it's almost like a naval mechanic would work for that, just sort of a parallel to what we've
got. Yeah, definitely. I mean, we've sort of gone with the Navy description just to strike a bit of familiarity, really, but. I mean, like you say, it is very different, you know. I mean, even combat underwater, I think, is subtly different from combat in space.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
I'm sure. We have a couple of questions from the chat room. Mm-hmm. The first question is: Are other components on the ships customizable apart from weapons? I'm guessing like engines and sensors and stuff like that.
Yeah, that's right. So shields, engine modules. You know, the capital ships will be a hell of a lot more customizable than the standard vessels. And really, the action and the entire game revolves around those capital ships. You know, you'll get, as you say, for example, corvettes, you'll have one corvette that manages to escape being killed multiple times. And then all of a sudden, they'll be promoted to a commissioned officer. Then all of a sudden, that guy is on your map then, and you can pull him out of that corvette and put him in a heavy battle cruiser, for example, nice. And just sort of nurture his career. And as he progresses, you know, you unlock more sort of RPG skills. But going back to the modules, yeah, absolutely, there'll be multiple customizable options, but really only on the capital ships, I would say.
Well, that makes sense. Yeah. There's only so many fighters you can customize. Now, I just found this by accident, but these stances, these moving aggressively and stuff like that, like, because I wasn't using that before, and I'm like, why aren't my guys attacking as much? And then I click this little button here. Are there going to be a variety of stances you can do, like waiting aggressively, moving defensively, that sort of thing? Yeah. Is that kind of the plan?
Yeah, that's right. So that's the action icon that you're referring to. And, over the course of the year, you know, the interface has changed so many times. We basically boiled it down in the end to this huge row of buttons across the bottom of the screen. And then we sat down and we sort of thought, right, how many of these buttons are actually going to get used? And what situations are they going to get used for? And when we thought about it, we thought, well, you know, really the player, they can be told what's happening and they can affect what's happening on one single icon, and that's what the action icon's all about. You know, if a ship stood there doing nothing, you get a little clock saying that it's waiting. If the say, for example, the ship's waiting by a friendly station and you want it to engage any hostiles that come near it, you simply click on that clock icon to change the aggression of the ship, and the ship will automatically go off and do it. And that's what shallow space is all about, and that's what this flotillas and wings system is all about. It's about pre-staging the orders before you get into combat. So I'm trying to do away with this whole click, drag, selection box thing because it's not very tactical. It's not very strategic, and instead we're going to opt for this sort of, you know, build your flotillas and wings for certain situations. It'll all make more sense as the UI develops.
Yeah, I'm sure. Are the missions going to be more linear or more like, are the battles going to be more fluid as they kind of happen across the area of space you're going to be inhabiting?
Yeah, so we ran some more prototyping. The original idea was to have it sort of procedurally generated, but it becomes much of muchness when you go down the procedural generation route. And it's very difficult to control the variables as such that it would be an unpredictable game. It's strange. Like, the more random you make it, the more predictable it becomes. But I think we can sort of balance the two. So we'll have a solar system, and it will contain the planets that we say it will. It will contain the major space stations that we say it will, and trading outposts, military outposts, and they will form the hub of the traffic. But what will happen as the game progresses is these other minor installations will pop up. So say, for example, there's an asteroid belt and a lucrative mineral deposit has been found there. Maybe some civilians will set up a mining camp, and that mining camp might become a target for roving gangs of pirates or mercenaries. And so it's a mixture of the two, really. There'll be a backbone, and that backbone is where the story will operate. And then emanating from that backbone will be this subquests, this incidental missions that the player will encounter.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
So there will be an element of randomness along with kind of a more linear kind of thing going on.
Absolutely.
Oh, I mean, love it.
Yeah, it all depends on the amount of time that we've got, really, and the amount of resources that we're getting, which is why we're hoping that this crowdfund, well, the pre-orders thing and the early access thing takes off, because, you know, if I can pull a couple of the guys out of their jobs and say, right, let's work on this full time and get serious, we're going to see quite a game. I can promise you that.
Are you doing this full time?
Pretty much, to be fair. I mean, I do have a day job, but every sly second that I get, I'm sort of on the computer programming.
And how long have you been working on this? Because it's utterly gorgeous and very fluid.
Yeah, cheers. I mean, it came out of the prototype stage probably about 2 months ago now. So I've been working on it for 13 months. And basically, when I started it, I just wanted to build this battle simulator because I was annoyed. I was looking around at the market thinking, where are these games? Where are the games that allow me to take a fleet of ships and control them? You know, you've got all these games like Endless Space, which focuses on Empire. You've got these games like Homeworld, which is an excellent game, but really, you know, it doesn't really give me that sort of level of fleet control that I want with the officers and whatnot. So, yeah, so I just set about creating this this battle simulator of sorts, and then I've just sort of stuck the reins on it and tried to fashion it into a game. And you can see that by the way the ships move and fight, you know, the fluidity of the combat. So, yeah, I'm quite proud of it.
You should be. I mean, this is only 13 months. This is just... I got to say, it looks better than Homeworld Remastered, in my opinion.
Oh, nice. Cheers.
But that's a whole different kettle of fish. Yeah, my fleet is really being whittled down. I really wish I could... I really wish I could build more ships right now, but I can't.
Yeah. Yeah, it'll come. It'll come. Give it a little bit of time.
Right. Right. So you just started taking pre-orders for this when? Like within the last couple of days, I'm guessing?
Well, literally today.
Oh, today. That's what
yeah, today.
Oh, wow. And how much is early access?
Well, I mean, you can get it for as little as $15, I think.
Not bad. And are there going to be different levels, like $25 at the soundtrack level? And
that's exactly right, yeah.
Oh, okay, great, great. I'll probably kick at one of those. Hunter, who is in the chat room, is asking, we had a question before that. Will different locations give you any different bonuses or resources / abilities?
Well, that's interesting.
That is an interesting question.
We did have a little bit of a conflab about creating terrain in space because obviously there's literally nothing going on, and you can place these objects in space to create wells for the traffic to come into. But in addition to that, we're looking at things like nebulas, stellar phenomena, asteroid fields to really to shape the way that the space is going to be. But going back to the question, it all depends on how it plays. I mean, if we can sort of reduce, say, for example, shields are knocked in half when you enter a certain nebula, if it plays well, definitely.
Yeah, that can definitely add interesting challenges, I think. Now, Hunter was like, before I get to Hunter's question, which engine are you running this on?
Yeah, so the game is currently running on Unity 4.6, which...
Okay.
I mean, some people might roll their eyes on that, but, you know, it's...
No, I'm not rolling my eyes. Hunter was asking about mod support.
Oh, mod support.
That's why I ask which engine you're running. And I ask because a lot of people, when we talk about Unity, say that mod support for Unity is not very easy.
No, it's not very easy, but it is possible.
Apparently, Brian found that shocking that it's possible.
No. You haven't seen. You're a few seconds behind in the stream, but there's
it's hilarious.
Big explosion. Big explosion. Like burned my retinas a little bit. Right. Explosion. You'll probably see it on the stream in a moment. That was a huge, massive explosion. I don't even know what that was. Probably one. I think it was one of my ships.
It reminds me of my first marriage, actually, now that I see it. I went there. Anyway.
sorry, mod support.
Yes.
Yeah, so you're right. It is very tricky, in particular sort of importing the models. But I've done a little bit of research, and I think it is possible. You just have to have the framework in there from day one, really. And I think the approach that we're going to have is we're going to make the first game. We're going to perfect all of the scripts. We're going to work out all of the bugs. We're going to get it 99% of where we want it to be. And then after 1.0, we're going to revisit it. We're going to start knocking together some tools that are based on the Unity editor, because Unity is now free. So people will be able to download Unity, download the shallow space mod tools, plug them into Unity, and then we'll use some sort of scripting system for the player to be able to feed the instructions into the game.
So how is Unity making money now? How did they monetize it? Is it through the in Unity store where you get assets and they get a cut of that or something?
Yeah, I think they're probably making an absolute killing on the asset store, I think. And they licensed it for small businesses or indie developers that are making less than 100,000 a year in revenue or something.
Oh, okay.
Or 10,000 a year.
That would be me. Something silly, it would be less than 100 a year.
Yeah. Well, you don't need to pay for it.
They should pay me.
Oh, I see. But if your company is big enough or the game makes enough, then you have to start.
You got to pony up at that point.
Yeah, that's right.
So, but at that point, you've made your dough, so you owe them. But yeah, so that's interesting, and it's always really interesting to see the stuff that comes out of Unity. I don't know if you saw the show last week, but we had the guys with what was that called? It was
Dimension Drive.
Dimension Drive. Okay, I couldn't think of the other word. So it's a vertical shoot 'em up, vertical scrolling shooter game, and they made it in Unity, but it's all 2D, and so it was interesting because I would have thought Unity is primarily a 3D platform. Not to use it like that. So, yeah, it's surprising to see what people leverage this for.
Yeah, well, actually, I think their main market is 2D sort of mobile games. I think that's where they make.
Yeah, that's their money. That's one of the big things about Unity is the cross platform. That's why it's so popular,
because
you can port it to just about anything. Once you get it up and running, you can. Yeah, port it to just about any platform.
Oh, because when I fire it up, it's like, here's a 3D scene. All right, make a game. And it's like, oh, okay, well, it's a 3D thing. So, it just would have never occurred to me to just go straight 2D with it. But that's interesting that primarily their market is that. I'm showing my depth and breadth of knowledge of Unity here.
I believe it. I mean, a lot of the games people use Unity for are mobile games. I mean, we're starting to see more PC development, obviously, but there are a lot of mobile games that use Unity.
Well, Unity is kind of like the Java of game engines, right? Because it's just like you click one button and it craps out a Linux, a Mac, and a PC version.
So, oh, really?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it really is as simple as that, actually. In fact, it's almost disappointing.
Wait, why do you say that?
Well, I mean, you like there to be a little bit of challenge. I thought when I first compiled my Mac build, I thought, oh, there's going to be issues with controls, there's going to be issues with rendering, and then I ran it and it just worked, and I was a bit like, I was almost disappointed.
I guess I can understand that, but I see it as like one of the primary drivers in this, because I kind of think we're in another PC gaming golden age right now.
Yeah.
And this is really for engines like this and Unreal and whatnot being so accessible to people are, I think, one of the reasons reasons why we're seeing so many great games and one of the reasons we're seeing space games like this having a resurgence.
Yeah, because it used amazing. To be if you wanted to make a cool 3D game, you had to be John Carmack, right? And
yeah.
And but now
you had to be able to afford a Unreal license.
Right, I know. But now they got stuff like this and just, you know, all the riffraff got in and they're all making games. So much to our delight. So this is good stuff. Definitely.
So how far – you say you're 13 – this is 13 months in. How much of the game would you say is completed at this point?
Well, I would say probably around 33%, so we're about a third in. The complicated stuff is done, and that's getting the ships to move and behave, you know, the various hooks in the code for the AI and stuff. But, you know, we've still got a long way to go. There's lots of 2D stuff we need to put in. There's obviously the solar system model that we need to work in. But the core is there, so yeah.
Yeah, and you're right. I definitely, from playing this and the look of it, I definitely get a Nexus Jupiter Incident feel to it, which is really exceptional. And having officers, you know, will only add to that, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And now, is this going to be single player only, at least initially, or is there any multiplayer planned?
Well, I think we do plan to go multiplayer, actually.
Okay.
But I think the way we'll do it is we'll just bite it off in chunks. First of all, we'll start with the skirmish mode. So the early access will basically be comprised of a fleet configuration screen, a ship configuration screen, and a series of scenarios, much the same as what you're playing. Defend the station, attack the station, mine X amount of resources, defend the miners, you know, loads of these scenarios. And the idea is that while people are humming away, playing, having fun, we're able to gather statistics on what works and what doesn't, you know, how to balance the ships and whatnot. And we'll do that intelligently in the background and it'll be entirely transparent to the user. And
we'll
just make these tweaks every couple of weeks. So, and I've done it again. I've forgotten your question. What was your question?
I forgot my question too. What was my question? Jim, do you remember my question? Because I don't remember my question.
No.
Shit.
Well, thanks for tuning in, folks.
Good night, everybody. No, because we still have time. What was I asking? Oh, multiplayer.
Oh, yeah.
Multiplayer, yes.
Yeah, so the idea is that we'll fold in the ability for the players to take control of the AI factions, and all the code is there in the background. Actually, it just needs to be a little bit of time to get it all ready. But the main event with the whole solar system and planetary system and the interaction with units flying around, I think that might be quite complicated to do in multiplayer, particularly because if one person is locked in an instance, you know, what happens to the other player? They can't fly around because that would be an unfair advantage. So they're either going to have to sit there staring at the screen or, I don't know, watch the other player duel it out. I don't think it will work. So I think there will be multiplayer, but I think it will be a single instance only sort of thing.
Oh, no, that makes sense. That makes sense. Because, I mean, I can only imagine how much work goes into making all these different ships that moving at different speeds with different ammunition and all this stuff move in a 3D space where they don't slam into each other. And I can only imagine how much work that takes. Yeah. And you said that's about a third of what you, that's about like a third of the game. Oh, we lost some units. It's like about a third of the game is just all that, which makes sense because, you know, you want this to look good, but you also want to play well, and you can only do that if like things move realistically.
Yeah, well, that's right.
As realistically as we can imagine, because we've never had realistic space battles before. So we can only, you know, guess. Oh yeah. Man, the enemy keeps coming and I keep losing ships. This is not fair.
This is not fair. It's only going to get better actually, because we've recently found a guy who's got some really excellent skills when it comes to some of the newer features that Unity 5 can bring. So PBR, physics-based rendering, for example, you know, some very, very cool stuff. And We've got some imagery of his work, but sadly we can't show it. But I think if he joins the team, you know, we're just going to take this thing to the next level. And that's very, very exciting.
I think I just found a bug. Now, just FYI, you're supposed to be able to hit tab to switch back and forth between your flotillas, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, with this flotilla that has one ship left, B here, I cannot do that anymore.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. I can't. I mean, I'm about to lose that flotilla, sure. But even with one ship, you would think I'd be able to switch back and forth. But I cannot for some reason. I don't know why. Just FYI, I don't even know if I could select that flotilla now. I don't think I can even select it. No, every time I try and select it, it just...
I know what you're talking about.
It sticks on A.
Are you playing 0703?
I don't... Yes.
Okay, 0701 is about to come out, which fixes that, actually. That was highlighted.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
There you go. Yeah. I thought, ooh, I'm a bug reporter. I found a bug. Not really.
Yeah. I will look into it, though. I didn't know about the tab key thing, so I think that's something new, actually. So thanks for that.
I had been using that to switch back and forth between the two flotillas, which I like. I like that you can just do that. One thing I noticed is, like, because in the text that pops up when you're playing the game, it's like switch between flotilla 1, 2, 3, blah blah. But here you have A, B, C. Is that going to be fixed? So it's like this says the same thing.
Yeah, I suppose I could change the letters to numbers. And the trouble is that you've obviously got numbers across the row on your keyboard. So yeah, I mean,
I would say just change the text so it says flotilla A, flotilla B. That sort of thing, because that was a little confusing. I have to admit. I'm almost done. I'm almost done, and then the station's gonna die, because it's not doing well. I didn't even notice that the station had its own defenses. I don't think it does.
No, not in that version. But again, in the latest version, it's got it becomes a carrier, so it starts spawning its own fighters.
Oh, nice.
And it's got some XL turrets on there as well. The latest version is just going through closed testing. You should have it probably in 2 to 3 days, I'd imagine.
Nice. Now, is that going to be just a demo put on IndieDB like this one is, or is that going to be available only to people who buy into the early access?
No. We intend to update the demo for some time to come, I think. I think there's still real value in sort of just adding these features and letting people enjoy it for free. And then probably around another sort of, I would say, 2 to 3 versions, we will stop updating the demo and then we'll turn our attention to early access.
Oh, that's fair. That's good. Yeah, keep enticing people with the free stuff.
That's it, yeah.
And then get that to a point where it'd be like, hey, try this for free. If you want more features, you know, pony up, my friend. Give us a little bit of cash. Yeah, well, I'm not going to survive this. I don't see how anyone could survive this scenario because you can't build new ships, so you're just going to be, you know, whittled down until there's nothing left but your station, which is going to die. Mm-hmm. I can't wait to see that blow up. That's going to be great to see blow up. Yeah. that's a big old thing. Now, are ships and stations, like, you were – are they made of, like, individual pieces? So, like, can pieces be blown off? Like, can turrets be blown off? And can engines be disabled? I think we touched on that before. But with the station, like, can a piece fall off as it's being destroyed, for example? You know, so instead of it just being one big mass.
This game even has the feature to blow your socks off.
Oh, it definitely is. Modeled. It definitely has done that. My
it
socks
has socks modeling.
My socks are across the room. I put them on before.
I could swear I was wearing pants at the beginning of the show.
Oh. That's new. That's a new thing. Right, Jen? That's a new thing. that's not usual. We're not going to last much longer. So you were saying this is the first installment of a planned series. That's why you added the subtitle Insurgency. What else do you have on the drawing board to come after this one?
Yeah, so it's about perfecting the formula. obviously we didn't make the crowdfunding, so, and we do need to get something out there so we can get funds coming in, so
right.
parts of the team can be made full time, and there's loads of places we'd want to take this, you know. We've got ideas for an alien race, and we've got that written into the story, and yeah, I mean, we've even got one of the guys even knocked together a sort of Planetary Annihilation style, you know, units on the surface of a planet type thing, so you can actually interact with the planets themselves.
Oh,
so
wow.
There's tons of really interesting places that we can go with this.
So by interacting with the planet, do you mean bombing the shit out of it? Because
indeed,
yes,
absolutely. Love planetary bombardment. There isn't enough of that in space games, I think.
We call that aggressive negotiations.
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously, we can't do that now, and sure. I don't know. It's probably much further down the line. We really need to sort of, you know, be comfortable in ourselves as a studio to take that on, because it's quite a task. But yeah, I mean, tons of places we can go with that. Insurgency is just the first part, really.
Right.
I mean, I wouldn't be surprised. Let's say that the pre-orders thing doesn't do as well as we'd hoped, and early access doesn't do as well as we'd hoped. I wouldn't be surprised if you see Shallow Space Insurgency as just a set of linear missions, because that will enable us to sell a game. That will enable us to get money in so we can set ourselves up to make something truly spectacular.
Would you?
Right. Well, that makes sense.
Would you be able to... I mean, are you building a tool that lets you create the missions? Or are you actually just coding them, you know, in like a script file or something?
Yeah, so at the moment we're putting together the levels using the Unity editor. All due care has been taken to ensure that we can sort of plug things in to ensure moddability later on down the line. But I think at this stage, it would just be a case of chasing your own tail if we started down the mod tools route, because... You know, obviously it's important to make sure that the system's prepared for it. But right now we don't even know how the system's going to end up, how it's going to work. So we're going to perfect the first iteration, and then we're going to revisit it, and then we're going to start strapping mod tools to it. And I think it's the only real way you can do things in Unity. So, yeah.
Yeah, because otherwise I would say, you know, if you were developing the mission creation tool in parallel with the game, just for your own sanity, you know, like it's like, oh, I got to make 50 missions now. Mm-hmm. You know, do you want to do this by hand, or do you want to like have a tool? So it's, you know, some people approach it that way, but Unity might be a little more difficult to do, because that's almost like writing a second game. So,
yeah, well, and Unity in itself, don't forget, is a level editor, isn't it? That's what the editor itself is designed to do. And then of course you've got your development environment where you code the various scripts, and that straps on the side. But yeah, that Unity is in itself is a level editor, which is why I'm thinking that the mod tools will be an extension to Unity. And rather than compiling a game, you would just compile a set of scripts, XML files, JSON, something like that. And the game would then readily interpret that and be able to pull in the various models. I mean, it's something we've thought about, not in great detail at the moment, but as Unity becomes more popular, we're hoping over the course of the next year to 18 months.
Sorry, the game crashed.
Oh, no.
It's going to happen. You know, early access, ladies and gentlemen. early access. You get what you pay for. Now,
So let me ask you about the early access route. Because have you had this on Steam Greenlight yet?
Or yeah, we've already been greenlit.
Okay. So is that how you're going to basically handle the marketing and the early access and stuff, is to go through the Steam thing? Or are you going to start out in the smaller places like itch.io and stuff and let people trickle in that way?
It's an interesting one, that, because before we went down...
You guys still there?
It does, but I mean, really, I don't think you can just do that anymore. I mean, Steam, obviously it's got a fan base of about 9 million online at any one time, but unless there's any sort of advertising that goes into that, or there's any sort of, you know, backing that you start with, you're not going to take advantage of that. So we're probably going to market it on a few stores. We're going to have a DRM-free early access, which will be available on the Humble Bundle store, and that will run alongside the Steam early access. And yeah, we're toying with the idea of getting a publisher on board as well, because, you know, really, as one man jumping up and down, I mean, you can see the game is quite an attractive game, but we're still not really seeing anybody listen as we release the press releases. And I think it's all about, at the moment, it's all about letting the people talk to each other about it. And, mm-hmm. and sadly, that takes time.
So thing that we have found out in just recently, previous weeks here, is that there is an entire PR underground in Steam itself, right? So the stuff with the game that I'm working with, where we would do, you know, like you said, you know, you feel like you're one guy jumping up and down, you're yelling into a dark room, nobody's listening, right? And and even when we did have press coverage, like Space Sector did a really nice write-up of it, and whenever we looked at the green light, it was like maybe 100 extra hits that day. So it just doesn't move the needle. But one of the gentlemen is the guy that's developing Zotrix came on, and he said no, he did, because he got greenlit in 60 days. It was pretty quick. I mean, it took us almost 200. So I was like, well, what did you do? And he said, well, I went into the communities in Steam, and I got to know the people that were in the communities and stuff, and then through having the conversations in there. And then I started looking at it, and it's like there's this whole social structure that's under the surface of that store. Yeah. That I was completely unaware of.
Yeah,
I know. I'm just learning as well that Steam is a social network, and it's kind of hard to wrap my head around that still.
Yeah, it is. It is very hard, and it's actually it's difficult to get into that social network, don't you find? Like, I mean, I looked at it and I just gave up in the end. I tried to get into the Steam Greenlight Developers Forum, but. I don't know what happened, but I just lost interest. But yeah, you're right. There's thousands of people that use those on a daily basis.
Yeah, and he said that, you know, like a lot of people, because customer acquisition is the most expensive thing of any service, right? You know, it's like people making like a dating service, right? And it costs, you know, maybe $100,000 to make the site, and then $1 million to get users on it. You know, so and it's worthless otherwise. So. What he said, though, was that he was actually like gifting away game keys and stuff like that when it was in Greenlight, where he's like, okay, well, you know, we'll promise out keys or whatever. And because you get people that join those particular groups, which are, you know, like the Steam gifts or whichever, the bundle groups and that, and they watch that like a hawk because, hey, free games, right? So, and especially for the collector people, one of the guys. As soon as we, because our game came up for, you know, in the coming soon list, the minute mm-hmm. that it hit, I mean, within 5 minutes of me hitting the button, I had 3 emails from YouTubers saying, hey, can we get keys? It was just that quick. And so those people are watching it like a hawk, right? So I clicked on one of the guys, because it's just my habit now is I'm going to, like, Steam friend every one of those people. And you know, so get to know them, and then I can hand their info to people like you, right, and make introductions. So whenever we get people on the show, and that's really the reason I undertook this project, is just to walk a mile in those shoes so that I know what's going on. Because when we have people on and they're like, how do you do this? Then I would be like, I have no idea. So, but I clicked on the one guy, and he has like, oh gosh, 5,000-6,000 games in Steam. I have like 700, Jesus. And I thought I was a pig.
Jesus.
And you know, I didn't know there was that many games on Steam. Yes. It's like he's five pushing 6,000 games. And it's God. Just like, my God, how do you do it? And I asked him.
I didn't even know there were that many games. Like, period.
How would you decide what to play?
well, that's the thing, though, is because he basically gets a free copy of everything that hits. And if you're like total biscuit level, you get a special account that you never have to buy a game again. Yeah, you have that account. It's like you and Gabe Newell. But it's you know, of course, if you're not AAA media, you're not going to see that. And until recently, people didn't even really converse that it existed, but somebody was talking about it, and I was like, oh, really? But it makes sense, you know. I mean, it eliminates the whole need for those people to go out and beg for keys so they can do coverage. It's just like, well, you know, they're guaranteed immediate access. So the thing that he was talking about, though, is when these people are so focused on what the new releases are and getting a hold of their creators and doing all that, that if you go into the places where those people hang out, even before your game's available, and start that discussion, then they're very keenly interested, right? And and that's when you start. So like months before you release, you kind of get in there and, you know, and have a little hug fest with everybody and, you know, hey, here's what I'm working on, you know, here's a demo, whatever. And then you kind of like build that relationship so that whenever the game finally is ready to be covered by them, then they're already kind of leaning favorable and they're interested and they'll give you priority. So kind of, yeah, so what it seems there. The other thing too is if you have a contest, and Brian and I were talking about this in the wake of the Zotrix guy telling us about it, is if you have game keys, like let's say you got 5 keys, and you say, well, we're going to have a giveaway contest, but you don't do it like on our site because we don't get enough traffic here. It's like everybody that comes here is already here. So you go to one of these hot places like Steam Gifts or whatever and say, hey, we're doing this giveaway over at Space Game Junkie, right? So we're going to give away 5 keys. Well, you might get like 5,000 people that sign up, and now you've got 5,000 people that have come and looked at your site for the price of 5 keys. So in terms of price of customer acquisition, that is relatively negligible, especially as the game producer. You don't lose anything giving away keys. So
yeah,
or we could give away other people's keys.
That's what I've been doing. Because, you know,
yeah,
I don't have keys of my own.
that's very interesting though. There's some really interesting points you've made there. Another thing as well, did you realize there was an RPS forums like Rock Paper Shotgun?
No, actually,
I knew there was a forum, and I've been there once or twice, and it's I kind of ran away quickly.
No.
It's kind of a
yeah.
Well, it's, you know, since the incident, Kieran and I haven't gotten along, and no.
But no, I haven't gone there in a long time. Why do you bring that up?
Oh no, I've just well, they voted us, they put us in their top 100 games to look out for 2015 or something like that.
And when, oh, yeah, I remember that.
When the Indiegogo campaign kicked off, I think the marketing agency went to them two times. I think many of our fans sent them emails, and yeah, for some reason they just didn't write about us. So yeah, I just went to the site and had a little click around some of the articles they did on us before, or one article as it were. And yeah, I discovered this forums and I thought, maybe that's the way to reach them. But yeah, I was just wondering if you knew anything about that really.
Did you engage in the forums?
No, I think I will go there though. I ran out of time because you literally called me as I was just.
Oh, you were going to do this right now. Oh, yeah. Sorry.
That's all right.
Yeah, is Kieran still over there? Because no. I know they had a lot of churn or whatever.
I don't believe he is. Oh. I don't believe he's been there for a while.
Oh. Do you remember when they actually started the site? It was like right in our forums over a quarter to 3 years ago. That's where those guys actually kind of gelled together and said, hey, let's make a site. And then all of a sudden they're like, hey, come to our beta of Rock Paper Shotgun, you know, and we joked with them about what a terrible name that was. And so, yeah, that thread's still lurking out there somewhere. But
all right. So I actually kind of have to cut this short. I'm sorry. I got to get to work. But because it's 7 a.m. my time. So, James, I guess the big takeaway is right now, this came into – this started in early access today, which is the 5th of May.
Sorry, it came into pre-orders today. Not
pre-orders.
Pre-orders.
Well, pre-orders to get to the early access.
So did you time it so that it didn't come out on May the 4th so that you had – you know, you were away from that Star Wars thing? And yet it's Cinco de Mayo, so people are a little bit drunk, so they're going to be a little looser with their money today. That's why I'm releasing my game. I'm hoping all the drunks will just flock to it. And I chose it tactically. No, what I did actually is I looked at the coming soon, and I was like, there's nothing coming out that day. That's my day.
What, today? There's nothing coming out today?
Not so much, unless they snuck something in on me. And then I'll cry alligator tears and whatever. I'm already committed. All I got to do is hit the button. I thought about doing it like on the show with great ceremony and horns and a mariachi band, and then I click the green button, launch, and whatever. And then, you know, but I don't know. I couldn't get the strippers. And
I thought lots of games expensive. came out See, I might be old school in my thinking because I remember how Tuesday used to be release day for everything. I don't know if that's the case anymore. Like, remember all the albums would come out on Tuesday and all the games would come out on Tuesday and stuff like that. I don't know if that's the case anymore, though.
I don't know. It's like the only thing that I saw was like the Wolfenstein expansion was coming out.
And, oh, is that an expansion?
Yeah, and Rust Bucket Rumble, which is going to be huge competition for me, I think. Whatever the hell that is. I have no idea.
Okay.
So, yeah, dude, there's nothing. There's like Blake Stone, Aliens of Gold.
Well, wow. What a perfect day for GOG to release Fantasy General and Pacific General.
Yeah, absolutely.
If you haven't played those, folks.
See, now I got to go spend money. I thought I was taking money today, but I'm spending it.
No, I'm definitely spending money on those today. Oh, my God. Well, folks, the game is, again, Shallow Space Insurgency. Pre-orders start today. Well, by the time you hear this, pre-orders will have started, and we'll include a link in the YouTube video in the show notes on the podcast entry. So, James, thank you so much for taking the time of your busy afternoon. Sorry we interrupted your sojourn to Rock Paper Shotgun. Let us know how that goes.
Yeah,
by the way, because I might want to start pimping over there.
Yeah,
but
hey, Brian. By the way,
do you
like Apogee? Old Apogee games.
You mean like Commander Keen?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, exactly. Sure. Oh,
wow. So Apogee,
Jazz Jackrabbit, and all that. Yeah,
exactly. This so. Because I'm looking at the list now because you made me nervous, and all the stuff that's coming out today is like the entire Apogee catalog just got dumped on Steam. Yeah, it's like, dude, Math Rescue. I'm buying it right now because I got to rescue those numbers.
Oh.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Let's see: Monster Bash, Mystic Towers, Monuments of Mars, Hocus Pocus, Major Striker, Star Gunner.
Star Gunner! Oh God, Star Gunner!
Oh yes. There's a lot of this going on.
Oh,
yeah.
That's exciting.
That is pretty neat. So, it amazes me that like Good Old Games does all this work to make the games work, right? Like with TIE Fighter, perfect example, right? They broke their ass.
Yeah.
They made that thing work well. Okay, and it was out on Good Old Games for a couple months, a month and a half, whatever. And then it comes out on Steam. But the version on Steam is completely different.
Yeah, right? Apparently it doesn't work very well.
Right, and that's the thing. Like Good Old Games does all the work, and then it ends up over on Steam. But whenever people release old stuff like this on Steam, like when Gunship came out, oh, God forbid, they just go to the closet. They get the old floppy disks and upload it to Steam, like... Well, hope it works.
part of me wonders if that's because they go, oh, it's Steam. We'll just put it up there and people will buy it.
Right, we'll shovel it up there because these dumbasses.
It's laziness. It's exactly. Just laziness. It's exactly what it is. Oh, God. Why'd you have to bring up Gunship, for God's sakes?
Oh, yes. Oh, dude, Rise of the Triad, Duke Nukem 3D, Raptor, Call of the Shadows, Secret Agent, Realms of Chaos, Xenophage, Alien Bloodsport.
Wacky
Wheels, Word Rescue, Dark Ages,
Wheels,
Blake Stone, Planet Strike,
Death
Rally, Crystal Caves, and Terminal Velocities on there. Oh God!
Oh shit!
Biomenace, Alien Carnage, Virus Jiggling Fever. I don't think that's an Apogee game.
This is my high school / college days. It's all over
again.
I know,
right? This is like.
Oh my God!
But it's just like Apogee.
This is my big shareware / wares days.
Yeah, it's like they. I don't know. What would you
download
call this?
Shit
this
off bulletin like... boards on a 1200 baud modem for hours at a time. Like, ooh, 2 hours! I'm gonna get the latest Commander Keen game. Woo!
Oh man, if you know if you want to recapture that experience.
No, I don't.
Oh, I was going to say, there's two places. Jason Scott's got you covered. You go over to textfiles.com, and you can read all the old BBS text files. And then if you go up to archive.org, they've got like all the old games. So you saw where they had like all the MAME games were playable. Now they have DOS games. I was playing Elite in an emulator in a browser yesterday.
Oh, I see. Yeah, that's amazing shit. I love the era we live in. It's just getting better. It's just getting better. All right, so I'm going to cut this here. Thank you, everyone, for watching and listening. Next week's show might be it's kind of in the air because I might have jury duty. I'm not sure yet because jury duty is weird in California. It's one and done, but they haven't called me in yet. So I either won't have to do anything or I might be on a trial. Don't know yet. So don't know what's going to happen next week. So I'll keep you in the loop. But thank you, everyone, for watching and listening. James, thank you for being an awesome guest.
Yeah, now next week is actually an evening show, though, right? So we'll back.
Because
he was concerned his fame was fading because he hasn't been here for a while.
No, Hunter. No, sorry. No, it's just this is the nature of the beast is that we've been having a lot of morning guests lately. That's just how it works sometimes. But, yeah, if we do have a show next week, it will be back in the evening, and we will have Hunter back. So, hopefully that will happen. But, thank you for watching and listening, folks. And we'll see you next week. Have a good one. Bye.
Bye.
And we're out.